Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 9th of November. A delight to have you all with us. It is a very interesting, it's a fascinating day. It's a fascinating morning. It has been an amazing weekend, and I'm glad you are all with us. Look, I don't know about you all. I'm not going to speak for the entire panel. I'm hungover. So, you can all be, we're gonna keep on going this morning, but just don't talk too loud. All right, so let me get to the introductions for everybody, and then we'll start in and talk about this amazing weekend where Joe Biden He won. 46th president of the United States. And meanwhile, the president refuses to concede. We'll talk about all of that this morning and much, much more. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, I'm hungover, too, and I didn't have anything to drink. So, I have to say that I think the one thing we've all learned is what the sense of oppression that we had during the Trump time. And when we saw those kids go out on the street, and everybody out on the street, not only kids, obviously, but a lot of young people, we really had a sense of something that hadn't happened in this country since, I think, the end of World War II. So it's a magnificent time. To me, if I was picking the music for the show, which I don't, I would have been playing John Philip Sousa this morning, simply because of this great moment in American history when I think this country could have been going into totalitarian oppression. That's what I really think happened. I don't think Trump has the slightest idea at this stage of the game what happened to him. I think because of his narcissism, because of his egotism, he really thought it was no way he could lose this thing. He's lost it now, and he'll fight it until the day they take him by the elbows and escort him out of the White House. Hooray.
We also welcome political consultant Libby Post. Good morning, Libby. How are you?
I'm great. I'm hungover with joy. How's that?
That's good.
You know, I don't drink, but I am very, very happy and relieved, and I feel like a weight has been lifted off of everything. This is a democracy lives. That's all I have to say, because it was on the brink of dying, and now it's going to live. And I'm just hoping. I mean, I know that Trump is going to be a baby, and we'll have to take him out of the White House kicking and screaming, metaphorically and perhaps in reality. But we can't stop. That's not going to stop us from moving forward and getting a handle on the pandemic, getting a handle on the economy, and putting our priorities back in place as a country.
Jim Hendler is with us, Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI and Director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration. Jim, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, a little bit tired. I haven't been drinking. I've been crunching numbers. I find every time I try to go to sleep, I think of one more thing I should check.
Like counting instead of sheep, integers and the like. We'll talk about that and see what you found in that count. We also welcome counterterrorism expert and bestselling author Malcolm Nance with us this morning. Good morning, Malcolm. How are you?
Good morning. You know, my drinking started last Thursday. because I thought we'd be calling this election back then, and I actually had to fly to Los Angeles because I did real time with Bill Maher, and we called the election last Friday night at 10 o'clock. So there was another night of drinking after staying up all Thursday night, and then it wasn't called until I was literally 35,000 feet over the Rockies, and where I couldn't comment about it. And finally, as it's been said before, we have saved American democracy. 70 million Americans won't agree with that, but that's what happened, and we have to move forward from here.
Did the captain come on and tell you what the election result was?
Interestingly enough, no. And in fact, I had Wi-Fi, and my daughter had just texted me, and I told the cabin crew lady, not a word. Oh, and I mean, for another 2 hours, not a word.
Maybe they're still upset about the bailout. Who knows?
Maybe they didn't want any fights started on a plane.
That's right.
3,000 feet.
That's right. Yeah. Although, again, I think Barcells would have got up. You know, we have a lot to talk about, so let's do it. Yes.
Joe, I had one more. Yeah, getting into this. We know that Trump is going to say, I won, I didn't lose. We know that. And we know, more disturbingly, he probably believes it than it just being manipulative. But what I'm really thinking about here is, what about all the people around Trump? Not the usual suspects, but the people who would have to make this thing work. Are they? What about the Supreme Court of the United States? Three people owe him their selection during that time. Would they prostitute themselves to the point where they say, no, Trump won? Would they really do that? Malcolm, you think they do that?
No, I don't think they would at this point. I mean, this was not a close election, despite what people think. It was close in a couple of places, but it looks like, I mean, when you talk about the margins that Trump won in 2016, which he called the greatest election in American history, with the most votes ever. Well, he actually increased his base by 5 million voters. He managed to motivate more people. And so did the Democrats. The Democrats expanded their base, which may become somewhere between 5 or 10 million when all the final votes are tallied from all the states. But I don't think that anyone is going to say, hey, we're going to prop this guy up now. He has been soundingly and resoundingly rejected, even though Trumpism itself hasn't. It's exposed itself as the ideology of a certain mass of Americans, of about 30% of Americans, and not the basic ideology of 70% of Americans, like he'd like to believe.
I'm very excited that you are all so excited to talk about this. I'm not done with the introductions yet, but let me just.
Somebody else is out here?
Yeah.
I'm back.
Let me just please remind you, also immigration attorney and associate with the Albany law firm of Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna, Sienna Freeman Tolbert is on the program. Good morning, Sienna. How are you?
Good morning. I feel like Rudy Giuliani standing in front of the Four Seasons.
Yeah.
Not that Four Seasons.
That's right. Between the Four Seasons, I have a landscape and the Fantasy Island sex shop and a crematorium.
Yeah, but Sienna, you're not going into the adult bookstore, are you?
That's right.
No, not at all.
Well, Sienna, good morning and welcome. And so for those of you who may have lost track, we have Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Sienna Freeman Tolbert, Jim Hendler, and Malcolm Nance, a terrific panel on the program this morning. So we're very excited to have them all with us. Let's go and talk about all this. I mean, look, I want to talk about the win, and certainly that is something to talk about. But let us begin by talking about the president, and that is, to Alan's point, of what comes out of this. When you have a president who is refusing to concede, I don't think any of us really expected that. And that it was going to be gracious in any way. I don't think many of us thought that there was going to be an immediate invitation for Joe Biden to come to the White House, or that maybe the president would even be there at the inaugural. But the fact that he is still defying the election results, and what's interesting, Alan, it seems that while all of this is happening, the world is clearly moving on without him.
Well, yes, it is. I'm very troubled by what's going on, Joe. I've never satisfactorily understood what the relationship between Trump and Putin has been in this time. It's almost as if now he cannot concede. Well, we can say it's narcissism, it's ego, it's all the rest of that stuff. But what if there really is a Manchurian candidate here? What if he can't concede because something greater than conventional politics is stopping him? I still think that the Russian thing needs to be answered one way or the other and hasn't been. So for whatever it's worth, I don't think this guy is able to concede, right? And what will the upshot of that be in this country?
Malcolm?
Sorry?
Hello, hello, Malcolm.
Still drinking. I've written several books on this, and we've evaluated from an intelligence perspective if he's a Manchurian candidate. Well, you have to remember, the Manchurian candidate in the original film was brainwashed through all these psychological methods, which turned him into a drone that could be controlled. That's not Donald Trump. Donald Trump is doing everything now willfully. It is in his personal interest to advance the interest of dictators, and particularly Vladimir Putin. In the intelligence community, we would say that he is a winning asset. And I'm convinced of that. Everybody I know in the intelligence community, including several ex-CIA directors, believe that he is in debt to Russia, and it is that debt that motivates him. And the debt could be psychological, because he just loves and admires Putin and the Russian oligarchs. But I don't think that he's signed a contract, and that he's a Russian intelligence agent. This is a man who sees money in a world that he has no access to. And there's actually a group of oligarchs in this world who have no loyalty to flags. They have no loyalty to nations. They have loyalty to, $100 million yachts with hot, naked women on them. And Donald Trump doesn't have access to that world, despite his fame and being president of the United States. And he desperately wants to be there. But now what's going to happen is, my favorite tweet of the week last week was a simple statement of, it's all going to come out now. And in the next year, I don't know whether we're going to be holding trials for people who were actual Russian intelligence assets or actually making money off the stock market. It's going to be dirty, and we can't shy away from it.
Libby Post.
Well,
everyone's
somebody just sent me something on Facebook, Putin's phone, with a lot of unanswered texts from Donnie. I think that you're right. It's very funny, but I think we will see a number of folks going to jail. I think that one of the reasons why Trump needs to stay in office, although he thankfully can't, is to protect himself, shield himself from the state lawsuits. Look, he's going to pardon himself, or my big fantasy is he's going to resign. Pence will pardon him. He'll take a vacation at some Russian Dachau and never come back. And so that he can be along with his oligarchs, who he always wants to be. But I do think you're going to see a flood of lawsuits, and I think you're going to see some people going to jail, because this has been the biggest criminal enterprise since Capone. And how did we get Capone? We got Capone by his taxes. How are we going to get Trump? By his taxes. And so, this is not going to end pretty for him, and he's like a caged animal. He really is. No offense to any animal out there, but he really is like a rabid, caged animal. And I don't think he will easily step down. I don't think he will concede. I think he won't be at the inaugural. I think he'll, leave, and that'll be it for a little while. And this notion that, which Mitt Romney said yesterday, that he is still the titular head of the Republican Party, if that's the case, then I think the Republican Party has a rude reckoning coming its way.
Libby, what about the 70 million people who voted for Trump? You know, there will be those, I guarantee it, who say, let him go, let him alone, don't put him in jail, don't do law cases because you're going to just tick off those 70 million people. That's not me, by the way.
Right. Even we are a nation ruled by law, and everyone is equal in front of the law, which I know isn't necessarily true, but this would be a great opportunity to show it. Or we're a nation of rogue, and we can do whatever the hell we please. And that's not what democracy is. What we did on Tuesday, and then, you know, once the election was called, is we preserved democracy. Like you, Alan, and like many of us, I really thought we were on the road to fascism with 4 more years of this guy. And we have to remember, Barr is gone, Pompeo is gone, the kids are gone. You know, all the folks who were propping up fascist politics are going to be gone.
Barr is gone? There's a question mark there.
Who? Barr? He will
be. Barr is gone. We haven't heard from him. Maybe
What'd
you say, Joe?
Yeah.
Let's go ahead.
Well, I was just saying that Libby's point being that as of January 20th, they will no longer be a part of the administration.
Right.
Let me go to Sienna. Sienna, you know, it's hard because so few Republicans are acknowledging they're very quiet. They're not acknowledging that Joe Biden has won the election, which seems, you know, let's just, to me anyway, you face the facts that there does not seem to be one shred of evidence that there has been any rampant fraud or issues with this election. Evidence seems to be in very short supply in any of the information. Now, that's not to say that the Republicans are also doing what the president is doing and yelling and screaming about the fraudulent nature of the election. But they're certainly not also going and saying, congratulations, Vice President Biden, on being president-elect.
Well, I think that speaks to Alan's point about the 70 million people that voted for Trump, right? So I think what the Republican leadership is doing is they're allowing these lawsuits, which are based on technicalities, just to play out in court and let the court kind of deal with them as they already have been doing. So there's a few lawsuits right now based on election observing and whether or not a ballot was completed correctly. And the biggest one, the one that has the most legs is the one in Pennsylvania, which allowed ballots to be counted that do not have a legible postmark on them. But none of these cases will affect the outcome of the election. They're all, you know, within 1,000 or 10, none of them go to the numbers that you need in order to overturn Pennsylvania, for example. So I think what the Republican leadership is doing at this time is letting these lawsuits play out. So at least they can, our hope is in their mind that they want to affirm the voter, our vote, our democracy, and show that there was no voter fraud, because that's what a lot of people are saying right now. That's what that 70 million are saying right now. So that's what I think, that's my opinion on what's happening right now, is they're letting these lawsuits play out, because this is not a Gore v. Bush situation. This is definitely not that situation.
On that subject, okay. Jim. Oh, go ahead.
Okay, super lawyer. So let me ask you this: what if? I mean, this is just a what if question. What if the three people he put on the Supreme Court join with the Clarence Thomases and the others, Alito, to basically say, okay, Trump, you're right. You were right to bring these lawsuits. There is the smell of fraud here, and we have to call off the election. What, I mean, it's not going to happen, but if it's one of those great what if questions. What if those people on the court did that? What would happen?
I mean, I think that is when you get into, we would have a huge, huge problem, because the states governed the election process. So the states gave the voters the roadmap and the policies to follow in order to vote. And what you have is, if the Supreme Court overturns the state's, the layout of the state's policies, I think you're going to have a huge divide. I don't want to say civil war, what everyone's been saying, but I think there's going to be a huge uproar, because all of these individuals, all these voters, every person followed their state's rules to vote. And so they expect their vote to count. I think that will cause a huge divide. I don't know if we'll ever be able to come back from that. And I think the judges know that. I think the justices know that, I should say, that they have to uphold the state law as long as it was not unconstitutional.
I need to get to a break. When we come back, I want to hear from Jim Hendler. We are talking about the post-election and what we learned over the weekend. When we come back, we'll hear more from Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Sienna Freeman-Tolbert, Jim Hendler, and Malcolm Nance. We'll be right back.
I'm not going to put the blame on nobody. All that's going to get me nowhere. I'm just going to look in the mirror. Start there. I'm gonna be the change. I'm gonna start with my heart. I'm gonna be that light, my own light that lights my way through the dark. I'm gonna see that day. Change is gonna find me, but it's up to me. All on me to make that change inside me. So I'm gonna be the change. I'm gonna be the change. I'm gonna be the change. I'm not gonna make no excuses.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Sienna Freeman-Tolbert, Jim Hendler, and Malcolm Nance. Heard from everyone so far, but Jim, let's go to you.
Well, so one thing I want to cue up for a little later is I'd like to come back to Malcolm's claim that Trumpism won, because I think there's some interesting question about that. But going to the main thing, I think I got to say, you know, Alan said many times on the roundtable, and I've always agreed with him, that this election was going to come down to suburban voters in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And this election came down to suburban voters in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And in fact, one of the things that jumps right out is when you look at some of the little counties around, some of the counties around the cities, the suburban counties that were red in 16, they're blue now, or that were blue, they're bluer. Again, I could start naming counties, but I won't. But so we definitely saw that appeal to the suburbs made a huge difference. And we don't have all the demographics yet, but I'll bet you a major part of it is going to be, in fact, those suburban women. And the second biggest one is going to be Black women voters coming out to vote.
Does this mean, Alan, that the Trump base is 48% now?
You know, I think there is a terrific divide in the American people. I wouldn't want to put a percentage on it, but I think there are those who are playing defense, and I think those are the Trump voters, the 70 million, and I think there are those who are insisting that we get back to some semblance of real potential democracy, if you want to put it that way. And so when you say, are the 48 million or whatever, or the 70 million?
70 million,
yeah. 70 million, the 48%. What do they represent? They represent the way the United States was and not where it's going. And I think that's what you have to remember now.
Malcolm, what do you make of that?
Well, you know, I had some pretty strong words, like I said, when I was on television Friday. And come Saturday morning, I got a lot of real hate mail over this. But one of the things that we have to recognize about the 70 million people that voted for Donald Trump is they voted for a man who put children in cages and liked it. They voted for an open, outright white supremacist racist and liked it. They voted for a guy that, through incompetence and inaction, killed almost a quarter of a million Americans, allowed them to die and become sick and flirt with the belief that We should just go to do herd immunity, which would allow 3% of our population perhaps to die without a vaccine. And they had no problem with that. In fact, they loved it and showed a level of fanaticism that is quite frankly disturbing. And, to the point of raising arms in some places and threatening to kill our other elected leaders in his name. I'm sorry. I find it very difficult to believe that we're going to be able to walk those 70 million people back shy of some national cataclysm like a meteorite hitting the country. They view Donald Trump as the leader of their white tribalism. And, mm-hmm. with some Hispanic representation in the Cuban community. But they view that as positive. What's happened in the last 4 years, because they live in an alternate information universe where everything horrible that has happened has been considered excellent for this country. We're going to have a very difficult time parlaying with them.
When you look at this, Libby, and you say how you try to bridge this divide. I mean, it. I don't know how you feel about it. I was watching on Saturday night. I don't know what else anybody could have said than what we heard from President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris.
Well, these folks are a direct response to 8 years of Barack Obama in the White House, which they hated the idea of having an uppity black man in their White House. I mean, that's really what it came down to. And so what I'm hopeful for is, there are some of them that will stay that way, and that's that. But the organized folks, I mean, during those 8 years of Eric Holder, Obama in the White House, even under the Bush administration to some degree, we really clamped down on domestic terrorism. And I'm hoping that that's going to happen again. I think that has to happen. There was a time when we almost put the KKK out of business. And now it's, roared back under this man. And we need to use all legal means to shut down domestic terrorism in our country, because that's who these people are. I saw pictures, I think, outside the Michigan State House of people – yes, talking to each other, being nice, but there was a Biden supporter talking to somebody who had this gigantic gun hanging around his neck. I mean, people shouldn't be allowed to carry like that and carry those kinds of weapons, because we know what they want to use them for. And we had, people wanting to kidnap the governor of Michigan and all of this craziness. So the Justice Department needs to do its job. It has turned a blind eye for 4 years on these folks, and we need to get back to where we were, prosecuting them, shutting them down. That doesn't mean people can't disagree with this presidency, that they can't have their politics, that even that they can't be racists, because they're going to be. But they can't have criminal enterprises where they ultimately stock fear and kill people. They just can't do that anymore. And we need to get back to where we were in this country, where those folks were not predominant anymore.
Sienna?
I completely agree with Libby. I mean, it's hard to change someone's heart, which is how you change prejudice. But what we can do is, prosecute domestic terrorism, get in, our new attorney general, hopefully, will make that a, top priority. And we can, with the movement we saw going during the pandemic with the Black Lives Matter movement, the Me Too movement, we definitely see the way that's moving that way towards ending systematic racism. That's something we can do. We can help to eradicate systematic racism. So that's where I think I'm looking for in this new administration, is to try to get out that systematic aspect of it, because you're not going to be able to get to the prejudice of it, because that's someone's heart, that's an individual's heart. But you can get to the systematic racism part of it.
Can I make a quick comment?
I was just going to ask you for a comment on that.
Yeah, here's one of the first things that needs to happen. There are no laws for domestic terrorism in the United States. Did you know that? Timothy McVeigh was not charged under any terrorism laws. All of the laws in the United States for terrorism are oriented to international terrorists and Americans who join terrorist groups. So that's one of the first pieces of legislation that has to happen, is we need to actually define domestic terrorism and have laws for people who use domestic terrorism. And then those people, the militias and all the rest, will howl that we are now hunting them down, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
Jim?
So I think I agree with that completely. You know, I've been on several DHS boards. In fact, it's very interesting. I just found out on Monday that a board that has been suspended forever was suddenly disappeared from the web. So I think I'm no longer a DHS affiliate in any way, shape, or form, but I can't prove it. But, you know, there's been dysfunction there and things like that. But they had a congressionally mandated program called Combating Violent Extremism. And written into the program rules were that they could not look at domestic terrorism. So exactly what Malcolm is saying. Now, that's something that at the DHS level can be fixed. And we have other such things going on at the FBI and things like that. The so-called deep state is a frustrated group of people who want to do their jobs and are not being allowed to. And I think an administration change that would fix some of this dysfunction will help us at least start getting at some of these things, even if Congress doesn't act up. So I think just getting the agencies working again will be a major, major step.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. I have a lot of letters from many, many listeners. We'll get to those when we come back. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. We'll return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Continuing, we go to letters, and here we have many. So we begin with Charles, who says, is today the day we find out what actual legal grounds the Trump people have for challenging the election results? Well,
no.
Sienna,
we have none, so the answer is no.
Sienna, you're our lawyer.
That was Rudy Giuliani.
Right. Well, sorry about that. So what we just don't know what, I mean, you can keep saying it's unfair and it's rigged, but you, at some point for people to believe that, mm-hmm. you have to come up with something, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're all monitoring. I looked this morning before we got on. I was just looking for lawsuits and seeing if they had filed anything. They said they were filing. There's, like I said, there's the baseless technicality lawsuits that they've been filing, but nothing that shows voter fraud, nothing that says a massive voter fraud. So we're waiting. And he's been golfing all weekend, so I don't know if he's had time to meet with his legal team.
To meet with the lawyers. but the other thing, too, about this is that this is, you're not talking about a Florida. You're not talking about 2000. You're talking about where he is ahead in four states, really with wide margins in both Georgia and Pennsylvania. And
you mean the he who's the he? The he, of course, is Biden, right?
Right.
You said he's ahead. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So he is. Biden is winning in all of those states. So my question is, this is not a matter where you have to come around and say, okay, it's this one area. There's a hanging chad in this particular district. This is a thing. We're talking about what? 5 million votes, number one, and you would have to overturn five states? It doesn't even seem plausible to be having the conversation, and yet here we are. Go ahead, Libby.
It's not possible. I mean, it's ridiculous that they're even trying to do this, but I think we have someone in the White House who, you know, just won't accept the truth. But we also have our own former congressman, John Sweeney, down there trying to make it happen, along with Rudy Giuliani, and, you know, and at a porn shop, which we saw yesterday. You know, this is absurd, and they're wasting taxpayer dollars by doing this. That's one of the most criminal parts of this. And even if it found its way to the Supreme Court, John Roberts is not going to let this happen. He's just not. Because, as I've said time and time again, he wants this to be known as the Roberts Court, not the Trump Court. And if you want this to be known as the Trump Court, you call it in his favor. But there's no legal basis for it.
Yes, but does he have the votes?
Biden is ahead. Yeah, he has the votes. But Biden is ahead, and there's no evidence. They haven't been able to come up with any evidence. Everything keeps getting, all the judges keep saying, come back when you've got something. Because there isn't anything.
What they say is usually if it's between 1,000 or less votes, then usually a recount would make a difference. But that's not the case here. So they're not expecting that a recount would make a big difference. And Gore v. Bush, as we all know, it was about 537 votes that made a difference. We are way over the $1,000 threshold here. $1,000 ballot threshold here.
So dollar a vote.
The recounting just, it won't make that much of a difference, although there will be an automatic recount, we believe, in Georgia.
Right.
It just won't make that big of a difference. So you can't rely, Trump's legal team cannot rely on the recount to make a difference in this. They need to find some legal basis. So the facts aren't working for them, so they need the law. And the law won't work for them. So that's what everyone keeps saying, and that's why everyone just keeps watching.
But
you know what?
Yeah, go ahead.
There's another dimension to this farce that the Trump campaign is trying to put out with these legal challenges. First off, it's one thing that you have Rudy Giuliani filing these claims in front of a landscaping store between a crematorium and a sex shop. But it's just the implausibility and the laughability of the people they bring. I don't know if you guys know it, but there's reporting out there that the guy who was their first witness, who claimed he was a poll watcher, a guy named Daryl Brooks, who was actually from New Jersey, he's not from Pennsylvania, claiming that, you know, everything was shut out. That man's a convicted sex offender. And no, really, it's in Politico this morning, you know, that their number one witness.
You can't make, you know, so, you can't make this stuff up. You just can't.
You can't. It's literally a joke. And they're thinking, we're going to the Supreme Court with this. All this morning, there was reporting coming out that the Trump campaign is planning a 30-day nationwide, you know, campaign of rallies and everything to call this election a fraud. He fully intends to try to switch electors and run out the clock. We're standing into danger, and the only thing that can happen here that can help this out is that, you know, maybe another Republican senator will come to our side. They're not. They fully intend to make as much mayhem as possible. So these, I don't think anything's going to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court won't touch it, you know, and if they do, we are in serious constitutional trouble.
Jim?
So I'm going to throw out something a little crazy here, but frankly, I think the Biden team should be doing everything they can to let these not to block the lawsuits out of court. Let them go. Let the transparency happen. So at least the kind of thinking middle of the country will understand that there's no evidence of this kind of fraud. You know, there was when he tried to do his proof of election fraud with his whole fraud committee a few years ago, and the fact that they had to back down and eventually say, eh, never mind, right? That just, you know, took some wind out of that sail. I think that we're going to hear a lot of noise. I think Trump's going to go be Trump. There's an internet meme going around saying, yeah, ever tried to get your kid out of Chuck E. Cheese when he doesn't want to go? But, you know, he's a spoiled brat and he's going to, you know, rally his friends and they're going to demand the pizza. But in the end, the adults are going to take him home.
Alan?
I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I'm walking around the streets with Murray now, and people are stopping me. And they're saying, thank God for WAMC and all of that. But then they also say, he can't get away with this, can he? In other words, people are scared that Trump, with all his, you know, stuff, will be able to pull something here. People are really worried about that. How do you answer them?
So I can understand them being worried, and I think it's worth being worried. You know, I keep remembering back to the 60s, where it was kind of shoes on the other foot and things like that. And, you know, I grew up where we were out on the streets and protesting, and, you know, there was a real issue, and that was, you know, we saw some of that reflected in Black Lives Matter stuff, but it's not till it really becomes a big deal. I think if Trump really tried to pull anything, you would have millions of people out on the street. You would have stuff that would just scare the real politicians silly. And I don't think a few gun-wielding crazies is nearly as effective as putting a million people on the mall in Washington, D.C. And,
I think the reason I think you're wrong is when you say if Trump tries to pull something crazy, I'm going to guarantee you he'll try to pull something crazy. I don't think there's any doubt about that right now. So then.
I agree, Ellen.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Sorry, the try may have been the wrong. If something crazy starts to happen, if you start to see people, you know, really doing something that could have impact, I think you'll see a counter movement. I think that counter movement has been energized. I think Biden has hit exactly the right notes in his talk that makes it so that the people who might be willing to just let that stuff happen are going to say, wait a minute. I hope I'm not being rosy-eyed optimist.
Pollyanna.
But, you know, frankly, you know, when we saw the women's marches, the things like that, none of them really had impact.
No.
Because they never really had the numbers and they never really had the people that stayed out. Black Lives Matters had more impact those places where it could sustain. And, you know, here you would have something where there'd be a real cause, and I think people would get out. And I think, you know, the only thing I know that scares politicians are voters in the streets.
Well, you know, we watched with great joy, at least I did, great joy, all those people out on the street, all the young people and all the other people. It was great. It was magnificent. So let me ask you a question, gang. Where were all of those people when Trump was pulling one dastardly, I want to use the D, and dastardly thing after another, where were they then? In other words, it's one thing to go out and celebrate the oppression being lifted. The other is having the guts to do what many of us here at WAMC have done in other places and really put your neck on the line. There's a question mark there somewhere.
You know, I was very disappointed after... the Women's March in 2017. That apparently was like the last real organized effort. It was spontaneous. They came together. And I know people that were part of the leadership, and it splintered immediately into a dozen, you know, nonprofits, all of whom wanted to do their own thing. We, you know, apart from the March on Science, which actually was the second biggest march since then, and that little, you know, we just can't seem to get it together because
march
many of these disparate groups want to lead, and they don't want to follow. And so we're not the French, we're not the South Koreans, we just can't get a massive nationwide protest to move unless the Supreme Court nullifies 70 some odd million votes.
Libby?
You know, guys, you can say all you want about the Women's March and the March of Science and we don't have this national whatever, but the fact of the matter is that Women's March in 2017, right after the inauguration, spawned countless grassroots efforts, countless postcards. It spawned the blue wave in 2018. Yes, we didn't see as much of that in 2020 as we wanted because the Trump voters did get out in a way that we didn't expect that they would. But the fact of the matter is we've changed the face of politics in this country, and we need to take stock in that. The Women's March spurred untold amounts of grassroots activism on a local level, which is where you get those 10,000 votes in Georgia. It's where you get Stacey Abrams doing what she did. And I hope she becomes the chair of the DNC. We need her energy there. I mean, there was a lot that went on, and we can't discount it because there wasn't some big, gigantic take over the White House and the Capitol March on Washington, which is great for a day, but in the long term, it's what happens locally and in the grassroots that makes the difference every single time.
We have to
take a break.
So I'm going to just pause you there, Jim. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have news and other business to take care of. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Sienna Freeman Tolbert, Jim Henler, and Malcolm Nance. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion. Jim Henler, we left off with you. Do you remember what you wanted to say?
Yes, strangely enough.
Excellent. Good for you.
Given how tired I am. No, I actually think Libby had a point when she was talking about the Women's March. Some of an unintended consequence. You know, I think it woke up some Republicans. Noticed that they ran a lot more women for the House this year, and many of those women outperformed expectations in their counties. So while, you know, that does bring more Republicans into the House by a small number, what it does is it replaces a lot of Republican men by Republican women. And now, you know, sort of we'll get to see whether that really has an impact or not. But I think it's really interesting to see if those kind of effects that aren't immediately obvious do certainly propagate.
Alyssa writes
to... Well, that's sort of a backhanded compliment. Thanks, Jim. The Women's March means electing Republican women. You know who we have to...
You know what?
To
you
want this,
to put
though?
Women in power? It's they're going to be in power in both parties.
Yeah,
well,
I wasn't going to say that name,
Libby.
Yeah, you weren't going to bring her up, but it's Elise Stefanik and her new pack. She feels
but Elise,
that these candidates did a good job. You can't beat it. You can't deny it.
But it also requires the voters to feel that
sure.
that's something they want to see.
All yep. right.
Yep. And they ran in well, go ahead, Joe. Sorry.
Okay. Tracy writes, what does Trump have on Lindsey Graham? Libby, any ideas?
Yes, I've said this many times. Miss Lindsey is a closeted person and a gay man, and I think that's what they have on him. And I will continue to say this, and you know, so like, bring me up on sedition charges. But really, I think they've got the goods on him because Graham was so anti-Trump, and now. You know, he's right there with him. I'm not going to make yeah. any illusions, but he is right there with him and is saying, don't give up. I mean, why would he do this? It just doesn't make sense other than his own personal power. I mean, he you know, the whole defund the police is what they were able to paint Jamie Harrison with. And so while Jamie was very close at one point, once all of that came out, all that smearing came out, Harrison lost the race. But they do have something on him. I'm sure they do.
Matt says they think Malcolm has a new title for his next book, Between a Crematorium and a Sex Shop, A History of the Trump Administration from Access Hollywood to COVID-19.
Can I co-author?
Someone really needs to write that. Oh, my God, it writes itself. I'm not going to be the person to write that. I'm writing a book about right-wing extremism and a coming Trump insurgency, political and military insurgency over the next few years. It's going to be awful.
Yay.
Wait. What do you mean, Malcolm? What do you mean a Trump insurgency over the next 2 years? This is what everybody's worried about.
Apparently, you don't watch Bill Maher. So,
that's correct.
I explained this last week that we're essentially sort of like Saddam Hussein's Baghdad in April of 2003 after we rolled into the city. The Baathists, you know, decided that they would stage a political insurgency where they would resist anything that was done from the central government, and then an armed paramilitary insurgency started very slowly. Donald Trump intends to be Donald Trump after the inauguration. He is going to create his own. There's rumors he's creating his own news organization. He's going to take over OAN to create Trump TV, which is those people on OANN, they're the craziest of the crazy. All right. They're Alex Jones level nuts over at that place. He's now mad at Fox News because they dared told the truth and call Arizona. So he's going to do that, and his tweets are going to have all the power that they have right now amongst his base of 70 million people, which means you'll get zero cooperation from Republicans for Joe Biden. Zero. I don't care how good he is in the Senate. They will not support him so long as, you know, the Trump of Damocles is hanging over their heads.
Lillian writes, tell him, Libby, we've done amazing things. Don't let these men tell us how we failed to do a perfect job. I think the dancing in the streets was so prevalent because it was a Saturday, a much relieved populace on a beautiful, beautiful day. Anthony says,
I don't agree with that, by the way. I think that women did do a wonderful job. And I think the Women's March, which I happen to be on, not being a woman, I don't, doesn't matter, but I don't agree with that. I think it wasn't a wonderful day. I think people were crying. People had a sense that this country was doomed, and they were so relieved that they wanted to put expression behind that. Don't put down the people who showed up the other day, because believe me, I think everybody else got
I don't think
it.
They were putting them down.
Well, they were. Because
I don't think anybody was putting them down.
It was a nice day. It wasn't a nice day. It was because Trump
Alan,
lost.
It was a, yes. It was a 70-degree day.
No, that's not the reason they. That is not the reason they were out there. Sorry, Libby. You know how much I respect you.
No, Alan. I think what she meant to say is it was a nice day because it was a nice weather day, and so it made it easier for people to be out and celebrate. I think you're reading.
No. This was one of the great days in history. As I said earlier today, and I'll say it again, World War II was over and we had this kind of expression. We had it the other day because America was going south and because people felt relieved, and they expressed that relief to me everywhere that they saw me. So no, I don't believe it was just because it was a 70-degree day in any way.
Patrick Rice.
Sorry.
On Twitter, there was a great comment about the celebrations where they said, this is the kind of celebration you see when a country overthrows a third world dictator.
You bet.
You bet.
You bet.
That's here, what here.
Absolutely.
Carrie writes, is the media giving too much oxygen to militias by covering them? How much should this be front and center? I have no idea. Please discuss.
No, you need to know what's coming out there. The fact that Timothy McVeigh, when he blew up the Murrah building, surprised everyone. And, you know, people in the counterterrorism community were taken aback by it. But when we looked into him and realized there was this massive counter-government underground who thought that they were actually going to rise up and start killing blacks in the United States once Timothy McVeigh blew up that building, because it was written in a novel called The Turner Diaries. No, you all need to know what the risks are out there and who's perpetuating them, who are the ideologues. Don't worry, I'm going to help you. I'm going to finish this book soon.
Mary writes and says, if I were a betting woman, I'd put my money on the administration finding ways to sway and pressure the Electoral College to stand behind Trump. If nothing else, we've learned how anyone with no scruples can poke holes in our democracy.
Well, let's go to our lawyer. Looking into it, I've thought about it a good deal. What can be done to sway the Electoral College?
I got to admit on this one. I don't know. I don't know what can be done to sway the Electoral College at all. I would have to look deeper into this. I've just been, I just reading the lawsuit that's come out. I don't want to say it's never happened, but we did hear about on Wednesday and Thursday the Trump administration reaching out to the governors and trying to get to the electorate. Through that, while these votes were coming out, and we have not, and they still were able to call it. And the news was reporting that they were not responding to his attempts to reach out. So I'm hanging my hat on that hope. But I don't know what they could do to.
Personally, I think it's very far-fetched. I don't think it's going to happen. I do think he'll try it, but I don't think it would work. When you rule, you got to have the people to some degree either being quiescent or behind you. And I think if he pulls that, there will be hell to pay. Real hell.
Simi writes, congratulations. It is a great day. My concern is people on the right who have fallen down the QAnon rabbit hole. How do we bring them back to reality, or do we just let them go and focus on our own? That doesn't mean like it's going to ever unite us. However, I find people on the extreme right have a different moral compass than me. And do I really want to unite with them? That is a very good question. Malcolm.
Hey.
Channels on the internet over the last week preparing, to see if they were going to take any action. The QAnon people are very upset and they're surprised. The first thing we saw is calls to get rid of Bill Barr. And they, maybe this is why Bill Barr has disappeared, because they were angry he did not just do mass arrests of liberals and progressive politicians. I'm not joking. And the second thing was, and we saw this after Saturday when the election was called, in the QAnon world, they have this thing called the plan. And the plan is Donald Trump carrying out this mass arrest called the Great Awakening and a culling, mass killing of liberals in America. I'm not joking. That's what they all communicate to each other. On Saturday, they were like, well, wait, how does this fit into the plan? Well, it doesn't, because you're all crazy. And they believe in this insane conspiracy theory. How do you talk them off of that? I don't know. I know some cult experts who have said that you have to go at this with ration and not refer to them as crazy. I find that very difficult. But I don't think it'll burn out. I think Donald Trump will essentially make QAnon ideology, along with his son, Don Jr., the main ideology of the Republican Party, because it excites people.
Patrick says, I'm a white male. Libby is correct. Please do not discount what women have done, especially black women, but all women. Please try to see beyond our male white opinion of what is enough. We go to Anthony.
I have no idea what that means. I can only tell you that we all respect what women have done in this country, and they've been a major part of what's happened. But I can tell you right now, there's no reason to say that the people who were out on those streets were anything but effective and feeling their oats in so many different ways. I just won't have it. And you can say anything you want, but they were there and they meant a lot.
Harold writes, the American people spoke, democracy worked. Alan, I don't hear joy in your voice, and your postulating of these imponderables implies perhaps a lack of faith in the very system showed that it has the ability to self-correct. The sky did not fall.
I want you to know that I have great joy, great joy. If you would have seen the tears coming down my face when this was announced, they were tears of joy. That's all I got to say about that. But I do think we have to be extremely cautious about what the president is willing and able to do. And as far as this business of what happened to Barr, it's very interesting because we do know that Trump called for the arresting of his political opponent. His arresting of his political opponent,
right.
And Barr wouldn't do it. And from then on, Barr has dropped off the face of the earth. I'd love to know what to have been a fly on the wall while that conversation was going on. But that's what that was all about. And he really, talk about totalitarianism, talk about fascism. That's what he wanted. He wanted him to arrest Obama, and he wanted him to arrest Joe Biden. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. None of that was rhetorical. Those were serious threats to arrest them. And I think Trump has that. I've heard that as far back as 2017 from people who were very close to Donald Trump, that he wanted people arrested. He did not. He views his position of power as a totalitarian one. And now he's angry. And who knows what's going to happen here in the next month.
Anthony writes, Jim Hendler took the words right out of my mouth because as soon as he started talking after Alan, Pollyanna needs to take his rose-colored glasses off because they're out there and they are dangerous. Let's see. We go to Alyssa, who says, my biggest hope right now is that the media does not give Trump any more airtime. I feel like if we just stop letting him get his message of negativity and lies out to the people, people will start to get back to normal. David says, just a reminder that Florida in 2000 was not about allegations of voter fraud. It was about counting legally cast votes due to a poorly designed ballot. Anybody have any thoughts? Susan asks on AOC's comments, suggesting that supporters make lists of posts from Trump sycophants. Anyone?
Nope.
Bueller? Okay.
Nope.
All right.
Nope.
No one's tackling that one? All right. Fine. I tried, Susan.
I should resist, but I'm not going to. The fact is, if the left does what the right has tried to do here, it's a major error. We have to stand behind a democratic system and a fair election system and not become the kind of fascist that Trump would have his followers do. That's all I got to say on that.
John says this is the third time in 3 years that I have asked Malcolm this question in this panel. I'm really hoping his answer changes. If Trump loses his mind from now until January and tries to launch a nuclear war, will anyone now stop him?
There is no possibility of that happening short of, you know, verified Russian missiles coming towards the United States. Not happening. It doesn't work that way. The president can order whatever he wants, he can carry out attacks, but if they're viewed by the chain of command as unlawful, the chain of command has an obligation to not carry out those orders. It's not like the movies.
Betsy, okay. Go ahead, Jim.
No, I was just agreeing, but also saying thank the Lord. That,
I was just agreeing and praying.
I'll just say one thing, and that is Trump will do anything to stay in power.
Let's see. We're being taken to task from Catherine, who says, I couldn't wait to turn you on this morning to hear excitement and positives, and I can't believe you spent barely a moment on the positives. Biden's amazing speech, the first Black Asian woman in the VP spot, all the states Biden got, et cetera. I'm very disappointed in the way you chose to go today.
Fair enough.
Can I respond to that?
Sure.
Yay! We've been like I turned off all the loud noises coming out of my computer of celebration in the background because we don't want to appear too partisan. But yes, joy, relief. I have been breathing so much better since Saturday. I can't even begin to tell you. So thank you for pointing that out. We're sitting here being very serious and missing the fact that something really wonderful has happened.
On the other hand, we can't
deny the historic nature of Kamala Harris's election and what this will mean moving forward. You know, we had a Black president for 8 years. Now we're going to have a woman of color who's multiracial as vice president for 4 years, and hopefully she will ascend to the presidency. I mean, this is, you know, when you talk about the Women's March, this is it. This is the result of things like that.
Betsy writes, isn't it possible that Bill Barr and others may have COVID? The administration doesn't want to broadcast the numbers of people close to the president who have been infected.
Anything's possible.
Let's see. We go to Peg, who says, could there have been an anti-female, anti-person of color element on the part of the voters who voted for Trump, i.e. voted against the Democratic ticket?
Of course.
That's their
ethos. I mean, he hates the same people they hate, which are people of color. This has always been about race. Always.
Sienna?
I completely agree. I think it's all about, as I always said, preserving power. And this, I mean, I don't know if everyone's seen it, but it's this great picture showing all of the vice presidents, and then Kamala just pops in. And everyone has been white male for years. And I mean, we're truly turning a corner, and some people are afraid of change, and that's what it is. And I'm really excited. Words can't express how excited I am to have a woman in that place of power.
Let's see. We go to Linda, who says, will you please address? Well, actually, I'm going to hold that till after the break. This is the third time in three. We already did that. All right. I'm getting my piles mixed up. Tyrone says, what?
In the meantime, has anybody heard about Mike Pence lately?
No.
Remember, this guy thought he was going to be president sooner or later.
And is that a bad thing? I'm just checking.
No.
Okay, yeah. Tyrone
Wait
says...
Wait to see if they throw him under the bus.
Tyrone
well,
says...
you know, Trump will throw anybody under the bus.
Well, actually, that isn't true, Alan. I did hear this morning that Mike Pence is holding the first coronavirus task force meeting today in a month. So we'll see what comes out of that.
Wait. Remember, Trump said that after November 3rd, nobody would ever be talking about COVID again.
Yes, that's true. Tyrone said,
I heard it.
For those who think that this is over or are in for a rude awakening, this buffoon will attempt to create two countries within one. I believe he is now going to start a form of civil war within the United States. He will now go on the road and preach his evil gospel to remain in office. Unfortunately, this is not over. And
well, no, that letter is very good. It is not over, and he will go on the road. He may be out of the White House, but he will be out of the road, and he will be fomenting as much of this as he possibly can. It's not good.
Peter,
you know what? I think he's going to replace Rush Limbaugh. I think he's going to make all the money he can, and I'm unclear that politics as an office is going to be nearly as alluring to him as being the speaking head for that movement.
I think he has a possibility of going to jail. I really mean that. I think that the New York Attorney General will have something to say about that. He's going to have to be very careful about how assertive he is. Now, I just said the opposite. I think he will do as much damage as he can. But if the assessment is it's going to jail or shut up, he might shut up.
Let's see. We just have 20 seconds, so we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, our last call, and we'll do another half hour together. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we'll continue to discuss what's going on, talk about some new stuff as well right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Sienna Freeman-Tolbert, Jim Henler, and Malcolm Nance. Linda writes to us and says, will you please address the announcement by Pfizer regarding its 90% effective COVID vaccine, discussing when it might become available? Jim?
So the key thing is that when you have a clinical trial, which is the most important thing in terms of really getting a drug ready, you roll out the results in stages because it's a long time till you know for sure. But this is the first of the COVID vaccines, and it's based on a particular technique that has reached that first stage where it now becomes possible to start giving it to people and seeing what happens beyond just the trial set. This particular one is very difficult. It requires multiple shots and a fair amount of time. But I think what most scientists believe is the excitement in this is that this is an approach that a lot of the vaccines are using now. And if this one works, and it looks like it really is working, then that's that's the foot in the door to pushing open a door to get a lot of stuff to start happening. Now, that said, I wouldn't hold my breath for a vaccine before Election Day this year. But I think, again, I think 6 months to a year, you'll be starting to see things really rolling out. But we're still probably a pretty long way from life is back to normal because a vaccine is out there. But it's great step forward, just like the election was a great step forward, despite all of the things that can go wrong.
Here's one
question. They say it's 90% effective. Is it safe?
Well, so to pass through this level of a clinical trial, the answer has to be yes. In other words, there can't have been any unexpected negative results from the vaccine. Now, again, is it safe 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? All medical things go through this very long and complex thing. But the first rollouts are based on clinical trials, and you have to show that the drug is safer than the disease, essentially. So you have to prove it's safer than not doing anything.
This one's for you, Alan. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on a position for Cuomo in D.C.
Well, I certainly have asked him about it. He says he wants to stay there. But, of course, as I've always said, you don't say you're going to the prom until you ask somebody or until somebody says yes or no. So, you know, the real question is, what could it be? You know, the one thing about being a governor is you're the top dog. You are the guy who's in charge. When you work for somebody else, as we have seen again and again and again, you're under somebody else's, you know, control. And I don't think Cuomo's the guy who likes to do that. On the other hand, we're talking about a fourth term for this guy. His father couldn't make it. You don't know what's going to happen. So if he's Attorney General of the United States, which I think would be the position that he would probably be best in terms of the cabinet, because he's already been in the cabinet in a lesser position, you know, but I don't know the answer to that. I mean, he will have to make an assessment as to whether or not he's still welcome in New York State.
Barbara says, please look at the map that graphs the younger vote. Most states are blue. This is so encouraging. Thank you for you guys for always being there through all of this. And that's from Barbara. So, yeah, on the youth vote, what do we know, Jim?
Still getting data, but I think she's right. We definitely see that. Well, so anywhere that had a major college campus, a real big college being blueness, but that was true last time. But we're seeing polling and things like that that come out to vote were far more likely to vote Democratic. What is not clear yet is what percentage of youth came out. This is going to be a very hard election to actually get some of these demographics, because so much of the vote came in through mail and through early voting and through things that are not how we typically track these things. So, for example, you can't do exit polling on, you know, mail-in ballots. So we're still going to be grappling with this for a while to come, and I'm seeing a lot of different numbers out there, but unquestionably, the younger and more educated are two of the things that are strong indicators of a push towards the blue side.
And then there are our eyes. And for all of us who are watching the TV or not in the streets or who are out in the streets, you know, there were an awful lot of young people out there, men and women, women and men, you know, and it had to mean something, didn't it?
Sure, Alan, but your eyes don't show you every, you know, every party in every state. And of course, it doesn't show you who are the kids who are staying home. So, for example, a large number of the evangelical youth obviously were not out partying. But that said, they're not supposed to go out and dance anyway.
Maybe. Maybe they were saying to their parents, enough already, I'm going out there.
The ones that
there's been polling and studies have shown that the young evangelicals are not as dogmatic as their parents, and that the evangelical movement, like the last vestiges of white male supremacy in this country, is on its way out. So we'll see another 20 years. Hopefully, we'll all be alive to see it.
When we were talking about the vaccine, the one thing I did want to mention, which I did not mention, was how the Dow is reacting to it. 13 points higher on both that news and, of course, after Vice President Joe Biden was elected president. So
what is it now, Joe?
It's up 1,300 right now.
To follow up on the Pfizer thing that somebody wrote about, I just read that Pence tried to take credit for it, and the head of Pfizer said, oh no, we were not part of Operation Warp Speed, so don't even try it.
Nice.
Really? Interesting.
Lars says, if Trump doesn't escape, I'm happy for New York to jail Trump. Biden can just wash his hands of it and tell the GOP, don't you guys believe in states' rights?
You know, Joe, the other thing that we ought to be looking at is the two Georgia senator races. Right now, the polling is showing both Democrats ahead. Warnock is substantially ahead, but both are ahead. And what that would mean if the Democrats got a hold of got a hold of the Senate, because that's what would do it. And whether that would change the whole political picture in the United States.
Well, and they're both fascinating races. Raphael Warnock against Senator Kelly Loeffler, and the one that just most recently went to the runoff, David Perdue, the Republican incumbent, and John Ossoff. And those votes are still being tabulated in Georgia. We do know it's going to go to a runoff, but it's still really close. I mean, it's just about a point and a half, I think, between Ossoff and Perdue. And Ossoff really had a great momentum at the end of the campaign, so it'll be interesting. And of course, all eyes and all money will now be in the state of Georgia.
That said, I think the other race is going to be tighter.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which one? The Ossoff race?
No, the other one.
Warnock.
I'm sorry,
Warnock.
I don't think so. I think she's, she bought that office. She's got one of the richest people there in the Senate, if not the richest person in the Senate. I think people, and she was appointed. I don't think people like that. And in the same way that Obama won an election thinking that, he couldn't because he was black, but he sure did, thank God. And I think that might happen in Georgia. I think a big change, thanks to Stacey Abrams and everything else that's gone on down there. I think I'd keep my eye on it. I saw Santorum on the television suggesting that this would be a very bad thing because the left Democrats would then take over and do all kinds of bad things in America. That's going to be their argument.
Let's see. Mark says, always follow the money in addition to all the Trumpian reasons why he will not concede the election. Fundraising to retire his debt and to pad his coffers remains a key to understanding his behavior. Malcolm, anything on that? I will take silence as a no.
Malcolm may have gotten on the plane going back there.
Oh, there you go. That's all right. That's fine.
He's on TV now.
It really is going to be more of the same. And in fact, a lot, I think it's Trump will be far more dangerous now because he has none of the restrictions as a private citizen. And he can mobilize people to do things without any legal impact against himself. I mean, I really think that he's stewing right now. And that over the next month, if he does this campaign that they're saying that he's going to do, this is coming from insiders in the White House, and he wants to barnstorm around the country. He might be setting up just to make money in the future, but I have to assume that he likes the state of things and that he's going to try to undermine Biden as best as possible. One last thing. Somebody complained that we weren't being really – we were being pretty Debbie Downer here on the show, and that's true. It's my full-time job. I thought the Biden and Kamala Harris speeches were incredible, uplifting, wonderful, and we knocked down a magnum of champagne. So I know that what happened this week was a miracle for our country because, like Benjamin Franklin says, a republic if we can keep it, and it appears we kept it.
Yeah. Oh, great.
And I want to say one of the internet memes that was going around at the same time was a picture of a 12-year-old girl standing in front of a picture of, the TV with Kamala on it, and
right,
looked just like her. And
yeah, that was great. It was great. But oh, great guru, Malcolm.
The one with the T-shirt, right? Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, oh, great guru, Malcolm, I have a question for you because, as your student, as somebody who listens to you so carefully, what in the world would make anybody think that Trump ever had any reservations about how he behaved as president compared to the way he might behave? He's calling for the election for the rest of his political opponents and all the rest of it. I don't see that. I mean, I don't think he'll be any less dangerous.
We've discussed that many times on this show, that Trump has no restrictions or inhibitions. He exercises raw power. And in this circumstance, he is dangerous. between now and the inauguration.
Terrible.
He may just
terrible.
Lose his mind, or maybe Bill Barr is actually out plotting the arrest of Hunter Biden and Joe Biden or whatever. You know, especially since Hunter Biden got to be on the stage the other night with his grandkids, with, you know, with his kids. These people are furious that what we see, what a normal person sees as a great American tradition, the peaceful transition of power. Many people in this country view this as an utter disaster and are planning to resist it.
Bill writes, in regards to the Georgia Senate runoffs, just a quick reminder, maybe we're not good at polls right now.
that's right.
A good point. That's a very good point.
And they're going to have a hell of a turnout for that election.
Oh, my God. Then Bob asked this question.
A lot of money toward it.
Absolutely.
What'd you say? What? I'm sorry.
A lot of money toward it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Bob says, if the two January special elections in Georgia are won by the Democrats, would the Senate be tied 50-50? And if so, who would be the majority leader?
Yeah, that's a tough one. The truth is, I'm supposed to know that, and I don't really. I remember that I once knew it. I just don't remember. I just don't know now.
Vice president, you'd think that the vice president breaks it.
Is a tiebreaker.
But there are some places that the vice president doesn't get into play. And frankly, I don't remember it. But I'm going to assume that's right, that the vice president breaks the tie.
Tom says, this is my first time I have sent an email to your panel. My wife and I are 70 and 69 years old. Yet we danced in our kitchen after President-elect Biden was finally elected. The song we danced to was Willie Nelson's Vote Him Out. Well, we're only sorry we weren't there to see it.
And somebody played Pete right before here. It was the Birds, but I believe it was the Birds, right? Turn, turn, turn.
Yeah.
But that, of course, is Pete's song. So I'm delighted because I think of Pete all the time and what's going on.
Please note.
I don't know about you, but.
Go ahead.
I danced to You About to Lose Your Job, which is a song on the internet. And if you haven't heard that, go look it up. It's hilarious.
All right. We can do that because we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll finish up. We only have a few minutes left with the panel. We'll get in our last letters and our last thoughts, and we'll do all of that right after this. Good morning. Last call here on the roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Sienna Friedman-Tolbert, Jim Hendler, and Malcolm Nance. And let's see. We have a few remaining letters that I want to get to. We got a ton of letters. We didn't get to all the letters, of course, but I have a few left in my hand here. So Peter says, the best news from the last 2 days is the fact that Joe Biden and his advisors have already appointed an all-star and national task force of public health people to go to work on a plan to work against COVID-19. This is the kind of leadership that has been so sorely lacking for the last 4 years. As Alan used to say when the fund drive ended, we are saved, I tell you, saved.
Ray says, delighted with the presidential election results and great vaccine news. But I have to wonder if the panel is at all concerned about the lack of social distancing we saw all this during the huge weekend street celebration. Yeah, it was
yes,
good.
But a lot of people were wearing masks. You take a look at that group as opposed to the Trump group at his rallies where so many, if not most, weren't wearing masks. In fact, a lot of people were not wearing masks, most of them. And here, if you looked around, you saw a lot of masks. I think it was a political symbol, but they were wearing them.
They certainly were. I'm just, the numbers are so incredibly high. It is scary. Let's see.
Remember 50,000 cases.
Remember
in a day.
How
in a day.
Tahrir Square looked in 2011. There have been similar demonstrations in other countries, but not here since World War II ended. By the way, the more and longer Trump focuses on ridiculous lawsuits, the less he'll be able to destroy the world on his way out. So here's hoping. Michael,
I think he'll be a multitasker. I think he'll try to destroy the world and sue everything in sight.
Michael says,
Go ahead.
Say it. No, Santa, please.
I was going to say briefly. I was going to say we have to remember that Biden has a special national litigation team, which has hundreds of lawyers on it. It's very, very well staffed. It's and they're very organized. Whereas, no, they're not outside of Four Seasons, but they are working behind the scenes to, combat all this litigation and be strategic about it. So I'll say
it's
that.
It's true.
And we also have to remember that Ben Ginsburg, who spearheaded Florida, has said that all of these challenges are baseless.
He's been great on CNN. You know, boy, so he's fun to watch.
He really has been.
He's very funny. I want him, yes, I always want him to be the voice of reason. Wade says, if Donald Trump goes to prison, does he get to keep his his Secret Service security detail?
Oh, my God.
That's not a new one. That's all over the place. Yeah.
We've been debating this for a while. I mean, if he actually gets convicted, let's say that he actually has to go to prison. I mean, do they just give him his personal protective officer? That's the one guy. Or does he lose his presidential, privileges because he becomes a convicted felon? That one's probably going to go to the Supreme Court.
Wow. Let's see.
I look forward to that case.
Yeah, really.
An argument worth having.
Let's see.
But it does lead to an interesting question, which is, would Trump at that point, at that point, pardon Trump as a symbol of sort of unification, number one? Getting convicted would be the important thing, but probably not as much as being in the prison, itself. So I think that's real. We can have fun talking about it. But then the other question is, what's Biden going to do to assure the Republicans that they have a voice? And I have a feeling there are going to be a lot of Republicans, or several, meaning more than two in my case, in the case I'm thinking of, in the cabinet.
I agree.
Suzanne writes and says, please note this historical event, Kristallnacht, which occurred in 1938, and today is the anniversary of this horrific event. History repeats itself. We need to be aware and on watch. Michael says, now we realize just how important it was that Joe Biden was the nominee. He is the right man at the right time. No congratulatory message, no peaceful or productive transition. Who cares? Joe Biden does not need to be shown where the toilet is in the White House, so to speak. He's
exactly.
been there.
Exactly. Exactly. This is the third Obama term. No question about it. No question. The real question to me about when we talk about who will be doing what will they have Obama doing, if anything? I mean, there have been a lot of people who think he should be on the Supreme Court. Nevertheless, I don't know if you want to do that after you've done what Obama has done.
Right. I mean, we still have Obama's book to look forward
to.
Yes.
Cindy McCain was just added to the transition team.
And she should be.
Oh, that is so cool.
Here, here.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
It really is great.
That is really great. She has been, not only, what we saw in Arizona, and I know the numbers are still out. But wow, she was a very active participant in that race, and it was really quite incredible.
That's why Arizona went the way it did it so far.
Yeah, I mean, it just we're still counting in Arizona, but the AP called it a long time ago, so we're all right.
I would took the probability pretty good.
Yeah,
I've looked at the numbers.
And you like what you're saying there?
Yeah, most of the outstanding votes are no longer in the counties that are going at Trump, and the biggest outstanding vote is in what's called Pima County, where it would take a surprise for us to see Trump really make up a lot of votes there.
The well-known Pima surprise. Alan?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, you know, Cindy McCain really has brought tears to my eyes on several occasions. She really is extraordinary, as her husband was extraordinary. And of all the dumb, stupid things that Trump did was to pick that unnecessary fight with McCain and put him down as a loser. That had to be sticking in a lot of Arizonians' minds to this day.
Well, I want to thank you all. We're out of time. Be well. Thanks.
Later on Midday Magazine on WAMC, we'll have an update on the state of the presidential race and local reactions to the race call in favor of Joe Biden. Absentee ballots are being counted today to decide the race for mayor of Plattsburgh. And with Thanksgiving gatherings on hold due to COVID, local food pantries are rethinking their efforts. Also coming up, the midday weather summary, the latest from Wall Street, and commentary from former North Country Congressman Bill Owens on Midday Magazine on WAMC.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC FM HD 90.3 Albany, WRUN HD 90.3 Remsen, Utica, WAMK HD 90.9 Kingston, WOSR HD 91.7 Middletown, WCEL HD 91.9 Plattsburgh, WCAN HD 93.3 Canajoharie, WANC HD 103.9 Ticonderoga, WAMQ HD 105.